Welcome to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Rizza. I'm an allied healthcare professional that has worked in the industry for over 25 years, with the majority of my practice being in the private physical therapy space and in public school athletics. My curiosity prompted me to create Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast to discuss the ever-changing landscape in the healthcare industry, focusing on sports medicine, physical therapy, athletic training, and sports science. Each week, we will discuss the barriers that healthcare professionals face and how we as individuals can collaborate to make the listener better understand the industry for a better patient and athlete experience. Now, on to the show. On this week's Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast, I'd like to welcome Sharon Vitti. Sharon is the Chief Executive Officer at ATI Physical Therapy. Sharon came to ATI Physical Therapy as Chief Executive Officer in 2022 with nearly 30 years of experience in healthcare. Before joining the company, Sharon served as Senior Vice President at CVS Health and President of MinuteClinic, where she led all aspects of care delivery, business operations, and strategic development. Prior to her tenure at CVS Health and MinuteClinic, Sharon served in executive leadership at Brigham and Women's Hospital, including 9 years as Senior Vice President of Clinical Services for Ambulatory and Women's Health. Sharon received her Bachelor's of Science degree from Clark University and a Master's of Public Administration from New York University. Welcome to Episode 7, Part 2 of Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast with ATI Physical Therapy CEO Sharon Vitti. In this episode, Sharon and I discuss the importance of education and communication in the field of sports medicine and the importance of educating younger therapists and building their confidence and communication skills. We then move on to the need for therapists to believe in the care they provide and effectively communicate its importance to patients. The conversation then moves on to the challenges of payer mix and the need for PTs to demonstrate their value of their service, and then move on to the future of ATI and the plans for growth, including investment in digital front-end, hybrid models of care, and AI tools. We then close out the conversation on the importance of empathy in patient-centered care in the healthcare industry. Now on to the show. How do we educate the younger therapists coming out that don't have the confidence and the communication skills? Like, how do we tease that out and how do we work on that as mentors? Because we talk about mentorship, but mentorship can be anywhere. It can be any place. It can be any time. It can be someone outside of the clinic. It can be someone right next to you. It could be another peer that you're working with. But this listening to how they deliver that education piece to the patient on why it's important for them to be here, they have to believe it themselves, I feel like. So if you have worked with X amount of patients over your career, you know what that expectation is and what that means to you, because you're putting a lot of energy into that patient care plan. You need to believe in what you're putting together, and it's important for them to be here. And I talked about it a little earlier, like, I almost feel like, you know, you're cheating on me because you didn't come in 2 days this week or 3 days this week, because I know you need to be here. And the more I see you, the faster I'm going to be able to get you better and get you back to what you want to do. And then you don't have to see my face anymore, and you don't have to pay that copay. I always use the analogy of, if I was, you know, Tom Brady, best quarterback of all time, by the way, for you non-Patriot fans. If I saw him, I was working with him, I would see him every single day, probably twice a day if he had an injury, right? But take off the board, you know, the copay, the co-insurance and everything.
Right.
They're getting better at a faster rate because you're watching them do their activities, you're working with them manually more, and you're providing better, you know, care. Not maybe better care, but care more frequently. So how does that then shape out to outpatient PT? We say, deliver the care you need to deliver now and be confident in it. Do it in a dosage that's correct. And then see what the prognosis and the outcome is for the patient, and they're going to be happy. Yeah. So we had a patient that came in recently. She had a frozen shoulder. High copay, $90 a visit.
Wow.
And she said, you know what? I came in last time. I just finished paying off my last bill. She's like, but honestly, it was the best thing I ever did, because my shoulder never would have been good. She had another frozen shoulder and waited to get the injection. She came in this time, had the injection early. We've seen her 5 visits. She's getting discharged next visit. So it's, I think the key is, even if someone has a high copay or they drive financial difficulties, maybe spend more time manually with them and provide more manual care the time they're with you to provide that better experience, and then give them the stuff they don't need to do in the clinic at home.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's that education piece and learning that. So it'd be interesting to see how that translates across the country and different people coming out as professionals.
Well, and you're right. We're all at a different level. We have new grads. We have people that have been in the profession for a long time. I think the key is you spend a lot of time with patients. Mm-hmm. So how do you use that time to get your message across?
Right.
To educate. The patient that comes in or cancels because they were sore from the last visit.
Right.
Right? Being able to, like, preempt that. and mm-hmm. say, you know, you might be sore tomorrow.
Yeah.
That is natural.
Right.
And don't feel like you shouldn't come back in for care, because we can work with that. We'll work a different, you know, do a different exercise. But that communication is key. And I think that is, I think it's really hard for our younger generations.
It is.
Whether it be their confidence level, whether it be just, you know, kind of when they went to school and what kinds of things were happening around them.
Yeah.
And I think I do. I see it more. You do see some hot, big personalities with young people.
Yeah.
But you also see some young people that are just hyper-focused on making sure they do the right thing.
Right.
And they don't want to mess up, especially with a patient, which is great. Great diligence. I mean, a great focus. But we're all people.
Yeah.
And so
you got to almost take a step back.
The
yeah.
communication, yeah. the being human with mm-hmm. people.
Yeah.
Asking a colleague, you know, for input or to help you figure out how to frame something. So I think the communication is a big deal.
Yeah.
And you can call that education. You can call that thinking out loud, just helping a patient understand. But you have such power as a provider to influence the way a patient thinks about their care
yep.
and their treatment plan and their recovery mm-hmm. and their adherence to, you know, the plan you're putting out
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And so I think the contract is fine
yeah.
to try to set expectations, but I think that the care team has a great opportunity
yeah.
to do that education and to preempt,
yeah.
you know, some of the things that they may be concerning them.
Yeah. I think the communication, again, is key. I think the big thing is everybody's used to using their cell phone to communicate. People don't pick up the phone and call anybody anymore. So to ask a therapist, can you call Jim Smith? He didn't show up today. Like, maybe you want to talk over the phone with them about mm-hmm. why it's mm-hmm. important again and kind of revisit that is difficult for a lot of people.
Can so I text them?
Yeah, can I text them? A lot of people do respond to email. They don't listen to voicemails anymore. They just sit in their voicemail accounts.
Yeah.
But I think that's an important piece, and that's something I think as providers, but also as leaders, we need to work better at with our younger populations to get them, but also better at doing that. But also, I think the other piece is being confident in your delivery, like with care delivery. So are you confident in being able to provide the time frame that patient needs, like up front, saying, hey, you know, Janie, you came in with an ACL tear. I know you're going to be here for probably the next 4 months. Let's schedule you for the next 8 weeks, and then we'll schedule you after, probably 6 weeks out.
After
we'll
that,
schedule
yeah.
you again. I think the confidence in understanding what the prognosis is and understanding mm-hmm. that a little bit better, I think us as professionals that have been out longer can be better mentors at that, so they can be more confident at the delivery of day one.
Yeah, I think that's true. And actually, I don't know if I should go here, but, you know, you think about AI.
Yeah.
Right? And we think about all the data that we have. We have enough data to basically, when a profile of a person comes in with mm-hmm. a particular diagnosis and certain circumstances, you know, their age and whatever, we could spit out a
the
treatment
plan. Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
And we could say, you know, this on average, based on our 5,000 patients in the database
yeah.
over the last 10 or whatever the number is, it's probably more like 50,000.
Yeah.
It's going to take 4 to 6 weeks.
Right.
It's going to take this. And these are the kinds of things you're going to see. So I'm excited about leveraging some of those tools. I know mm-hmm. people get a little scared about them, but I do think we are uniquely positioned because of the amount of data that we've collected, the outcomes
yeah.
data, coupled with the patient's, you know, feedback. We have a very robust opportunity to use that data in a way that helps enable some
yeah.
of our younger folks, or, you know, it can affirm,
yeah.
it could give them ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could just, you could even use this evidence based
yeah.
on our 50,000 people that have come in with a knee replacement.
Right.
This is
what
typically what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also a great learning tool, right? Another piece of that learning thing that we can offer to the,
yeah.
to the group. So what are some of the things you witnessed the most through your travels around the country in different clinics? I know you said, you know, one's different from the other, but
yeah.
maybe what's the most commonality, I should say, that you noticed?
Yeah, it's going to sound mushy.
That's all right. I'll take it.
Patients really appreciate all of what we were talking about, the
okay.
community that's created, the team-based care, the caring attitude, right? The empathy, the emotional connections that they have with people. They talk about their care, their treatment,
yeah.
right? Their specific treatment, but they more talk about how we make them feel.
Yeah.
So I see that across the board. I would say two other things would be people for the most part like their jobs.
Yeah.
Right? Whatever level. And they voice that. Mm-hmm. On the other side of it, people feel really open about sharing where we could do better. So right. I love that, right? I love that, you know, that both those sides to it. And then I would say, oh, there's a lot of things, team-based care. But the one I really like is many times I go into a clinic and our providers are talking about what next.
Yeah.
So our OSSs,
yeah.
Many are moving on to go to PTA school or PT school. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Right? Our PTs are taking on residency or they want to get into women's health because yeah. there's a need in the population. So mm-hmm. I love that continuously sort of like wanting to learn, wanting to improve, wanting to, and it could be even at a basic level, like why can't we just collect the credit card on file and once, and then we don't have to do it every time for a patient because yeah. that would make it so much easier for yeah. patients and like that. So that continuous
right.
sort of learning process improvement, pushing us to be better. Like yep. I hear that a lot in the yeah. clinics and I like it.
Which is great. I think there's always good to hear that they're always thinking forward, right? Yep. Forward thinking is key. And that's yep. going to keep you, you know, continuing what you like to do, which is treat patients and not worry about the other stuff we talk about, like the front office stuff,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Where do you see a company this size? Is there any traction for us to have influence on payer mix? Like, is there discussion about that with different big companies like Blue Cross or Tufts? Or is that even, because I know it's a problem everywhere, but right. with a company this size, what we provide is outcomes actually play a role in helping us to become like the premier provider. I mean, that's why I'm asking, because I don't know.
So let me answer it two ways. So one, I've been working with many of our other colleagues with APTQI,
okay.
which is one of our national trade organizations in Washington,
yeah.
to have a voice, a shared common voice. There were about 12 of us there a couple months ago,
yeah.
meeting with AARP, meeting with MedPAC, which is the group that sets the CMS fee schedule, mm-hmm. meeting with Ways and Means, et cetera. And, you know, that group sets a lot of the rates or the regs of what yeah. we can and can't do. And it really was, unfortunately, quite eye-opening to me that they just don't know a lot about the value of PT.
Yeah.
Now, I'll put that back on us. We haven't done a good job of showing what the value right. of PT is and how it actually decreases cost of care. It improves patients' quality of life, their longevity, and their mobility, especially when we think about the aging population and the baby boomers, et cetera. So that to me was astonishing, mm-hmm. kind of is what it is, but we need to keep hitting that one.
Yeah.
So the other side of it is our commercial payers, right? So that's our government payers, our Medicare for the most part, and then a little bit of Medicaid. And by the way, as we know, we've had Medicare cuts for the last 4 years,
yeah.
I think we're in year five,
mm-hmm.
to the tune of about 10%.
Yeah.
And so that to me shows that there's just not a understanding or a valuing of what we do. And so we've got work to do there.
Yeah.
On the commercial side, so I think we're just too small part of the equation for the commercial payers to really, pay a lot of mind to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think our payer contracting team does a fantastic job. The unfortunate thing is you have some wins where a payer will acknowledge that you haven't had a rate increase for a little while. We haven't kept up with cost of, you know, inflation or anything like that. And you'll get a rate increase, but then you'll have another payer that's like, oh, we're going to now require, you know, pre-auths for every visit, right? So I think they have not appreciated PT and they have not made it easy for patients to access care.
Mm-hmm.
So what else could we do? So on the government side, we just need to keep bringing to the table information and helping educate them,
yeah.
spoon feeding them. On the commercial side, I think we need to go to the table with a different offering.
Okay.
And it's not the PT offering, it's how we get paid for the PT
yeah.
offering.
Yeah.
And so we are just about to move into a situation where we will be working with a large orthopedic MSO
mm-hmm.
in Arizona, and we will be focused on PT first,
yeah.
and then we'll look at how that translates into better patient outcomes, better access for patients, and lower cost of care overall mm-hmm. over a period of time. With that, then I think we are able to go to payers because I think the PT first is the model. How do we get further up the food chain?
Yeah.
How do we get involved with patients that don't have a surgery, but have some kind of an ache, pain, or strain? And how do we help strengthen them? How do we help prevent the need for a surgical or a more costly intervention? And so to me, that model is the model to move toward. And the only way to do that, let me say it a different way. The fee-for-service game is neutral at best.
Yeah.
Some rates go up, some rates go down. Like, yeah, you're just kind of hitting your head against the wall, especially with inflation. Like, we need them to go up.
Right.
So that we can be, the cost of education's gone up, the
cost
of living. So I think with this particular situation and this partnership we're doing, we'll do it initially for fee-for-service. We're also looking at hybrid, so
yeah,
we'll use some virtual, which is a little lower cost of care.
Yeah.
So that'll be number one. And then number two, we will be able to see the data on,
yeah,
the true cost of that particular patient relative to other like patients. And so if we have a value prop there where we're able to say, if you use PT as your first intervention, then you will decrease the musculoskeletal expense,
right,
per patient by this amount.
Over time, yeah.
Once you have information like that, you can go to your payers,
yeah,
and they're going to listen.
Or, yeah,
you can go to your self-insured employers,
yeah,
and they're going to be interested. And so, because it's good for the patients,
yeah,
it's good for, it's the trifecta, right? We have a level, we have outcomes metrics,
yeah,
we have quality of care. So it's quality of care, it's accessible care, because, mm-hmm, it's hybrid and we're motivated,
right,
to take care of the patients versus refer them off, and then it's cost of care.
Yeah.
So I think that you need to have a proof case like that to then get the attention of a payer, mm-hmm, to be like, that sounds interesting. And then you're kind of, you say, okay, so this is what we'd like to do. We'd like to put this program in place. We want you to remove the copay so that patients can come to us without a copay. And then we'll measure the outcomes. And if we save money, we'll share that with you.
Right. Right.
Or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that would be good. I think something definitely needs to change because we've been seeing it do this.
I know.
You know, and it does,
yeah,
this a little bit, and then it goes,
yeah,
back again. So,
yeah,
I think it makes it challenging, I think, for everybody involved because, I mean, you know as well as anybody, I mean, a business is a business. You need to run the business. You need to pay for the business and then,
yeah,
pay the employees. And then that's just, yeah, the way it works.
I mean, some of the Medicaid programs, like Massachusetts is one.
Yeah.
For the fee-for-service Medicaid, like, it kills me. So in Mass, we're taking it. In other states, it kills me not to take it.
Yeah.
It's not, we're not contributing to society and,
yeah,
helping the community. We lose money on every one of,
yeah,
those visits.
Yeah.
I can show you the data.
Yeah.
It's not about profit. It's,
yeah,
about, like, let's just break even on,
yeah,
our costs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that, you know, the payers, there's the reality of just the economics. And then there's, like, there's a little bit of a pride point here too, and like feeling that they see the value
of what
of
we're doing
PT.
Every day. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so the two are, one's a little bit of a more,
yeah,
emotional, one,
yeah,
is very, you know, very concrete and quantitative, but this is a uphill battle.
Yeah.
I'd say one of the biggest challenges is we are not one voice.
Right.
Right. 20% of PT clinics are in organizations like ours, big, you know,
yeah,
couple hundred, whatever. The other 20% are in like your health systems and all that. The remaining 60% are
the smalls, ones
less
and twos.
Clinics together.
Yeah.
And so they're just trying to keep the doors open and,
right,
take care of the patients.
Right.
Like, they don't have time to be, you know.
Right.
So and our trade organizations, APTA and APTQI, certainly are trying to gather the masses. But I'd say that's one of my observations. Like PT seems to be less,
yeah,
organized and their voice is not as strong,
yeah,
as it needs to be. And so we as an organization, ATI, we have the ability to put ourselves out there with our colleagues. And then every single person at ATI, I mean, we send,
yeah,
out these notes about writing,
yeah,
a letter.
Advocate
yourself. Every one letter,
yeah,
like they count the letters.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you're talking to these politicians and,
yeah,
these folks that we want them to support our bills and this and that.
Yeah.
Like every, like if we get from like 5,000 constituents writing a letter, 25,000. Oh, that's interesting,
yeah, that's
to
interesting,
me.
Yeah.
So I know it's like, oh, just one letter, little me, but it makes a difference.
It does.
ATI, we have over, I don't know, over 4,000, 5,000 providers.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So like if we all write a letter and
it's one organization,
and USPH does it,
yeah,
but like we've got 25,000 letters.
Yeah, yeah.
So it does make a difference. I think everyone at every level, how do we educate the patients in,
yeah,
front of us, the providers that we get referrals from, our Congress people, our senators,
yeah,
our, you know, our payers, our employers,
yeah,
like it's a whole ecosystem that we need to just repeat the same message over,
yeah,
and over again.
And it goes back to our discussion earlier. It's what's the value of your of you providing. So as a therapist, how do you put the value on yourself? You paid a lot for your education, a lot of years of education. You are the expert in your field. How do you value that and show the value to your patient that then tells their doctor about you, which then tells their colleague, or they tell their coworker, or friend, or parent, or whoever it is, and that they understand what PT is, right? Yeah. And that's what you have to do.
Yeah, I mean, I sit here now as the CEO of this company, and there's inflation on everything that we do, whether it be our rent, whether it be our salaries, whether it be our med-surg supplies.
Yeah.
And so we as a business, like we need to increase our revenue so that we can handle that inflation. I would love to pay everyone more.
Right.
I'd say the second thing is we want to reinvest. We want to invest in our EMR, or we want to invest in upgrading our clinics or whatever it ends up being. And so you need to have, so this isn't about profit,
right?
And making a whole lot of money.
But making
us better. This is about being at least in line with inflation.
Right.
And then it's also being able to have some money to reinvest in the business and to continue to evolve and grow the business as it should. And so that's a very key piece to get that message out. And it's work we have to keep doing.
Now, where do you see ATI as a company in the next 5, 10, or 15 years? I don't think you and I are going to be around in 15 years. We'll be around, but maybe not here.
I can't even. In
I might be retired by then.
I can barely get to five years in healthcare.
Let me rephrase it. In the next year or two, where do you see us with what we talked about today? Is there something that you... I don't want to give all your secrets away, but is there something that you're seeing like in the next year that we're going to do that's going to be like, not groundbreaking, but hey, this is going to put us to the next level? Is it that telehealth hybrid? Is it the access to care? Is it, trying to provide more care with more providers? Or is it everything? Like, where do you see us making that shift?
Yeah, I think we're in the process right now of putting together our growth portfolio.
Yeah.
And it has multiple layers to it. Nothing is as a business, right, or as a national practice, we need, we look at demand and referrals. We look at rate.
Mm-hmm.
We look at our access for patients, right?
Yeah.
And then we look at our providers, our talent, our people, right? So those are all the same levers. They were the same levers.
Yeah.
It's just how do you bring those to life in different ways?
Yeah.
And so I would say, we're looking at investing more in our digital front end.
Yeah.
We're looking at the hybrid model, right, to create options for patients. We're looking at strategic partners that have the same values and the same priorities that we do.
Yeah.
And how do we manage a population, a community of people versus a one-by-one?
Yeah.
So some of those will come to life. We're looking at different payment models so that we're not just beholden to a fee-for-service. And we're doing some pilots, which will allow us to then maybe have some value props or proof of concept that we can share with others to get them to think differently. We need to do more on our EHR to continue to decrease the, administrative time that our providers have. Mm-hmm. And so AI is a great example.
Yeah.
Not only is it the ability to aggregate our data and use it in a predictable way, but the AI tools that we're looking at also could decrease the amount of documentation time and make it easier for our providers to document.
Make a lot of people happy.
I know, right? So our AI strategy and our EHR, continuing to evolve that. Those are probably the main. What that does then is it allows us to continue to get further upstream.
Yeah.
In the sort of care continuum, the musculoskeletal care continuum. And then it also allows us to get compensated for quality care management, the things we do really well, whether it be that incentive payments, at-risk payments, or some combination of the two.
That's great.
So those are the key pieces. We're going to share that broadly in the fall. We're getting ready to share that with our board.
Yeah.
And some of it's like a vision piece, and then some of it's sort of these tactical building blocks here. But I would say the good news is, we've done a lot of work to stabilize ATI and to recover it a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think we, we'll continue to strengthen the core business, but we need to get on to the next chapter of ATI,
which is great.
And so, and our board is really supportive. And I think those types of activities will may allow us to pave the way in the musculoskeletal world for the PT profession and for others to, you know, others to follow. We like to lead. And so a little difficult to talk about them right now because it's all talk. I really want to have some proof points, but we're the growth plan will be done in the next, I'd say, 2 weeks. We're going to present it at the July board meeting, and then we are going to socialize it broader.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And I hope folks across ATI get really excited about it because it really is our next chapter. And like I said, we're turning 30 in 2025. And I'm still friendly with the original founder, Greg Steele.
Yeah.
Friendly isn't the right word, but we're colleagues.
Yeah.
And the bones of ATI are solid.
Yeah.
And the values, and those have carried us to where we are.
Yeah.
And those always need to be there.
Yeah.
But how we leverage those to
the evolution of what we're doing,
to impact our providers, our patients, our patient care model, our payments, our economics is what we need to do.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, NLE this past year was, it got everybody so excited. Just the evolution of what's happening, the board members coming and talking. The whole C-suite talking about like what's to come, and it, I think it just made everybody feel like they had a great experience. And we talked about it, like what's going to be like this year, and then after, like that was actually very valuable for us.
Yeah.
So I know a lot goes into it, so it's great to hear the stuff that's going to happen.
Yeah, we're positioned to do well. I shouldn't even say to do. We are a fantastic organization with a lot of really committed people, committed to our purpose, and so. That base allows us to explore and do different things. And I think we're positioned to lead in the musculoskeletal space and to be disruptive in the whole rehab, you know, profession.
Which is good.
Which is good for us. It's good for our people. It's good for our business. It's good for our patients.
Yeah, which is amazing. To close out, if you had someone come to you that wanted to get into healthcare administration or healthcare leadership, what is something you would tell them that you went through or something that helped you or something you thought of like, hey, if I did that, I may have gotten to here a little bit easier. Is there something that you would help to mentor, help to shape them in the way that would make it beneficial for them?
So I would say, and by the way, I have a young daughter who just just graduated from graduate school with her MHA, which is health administration. And so she's
congratulations
continuously asking me.
My daughter's got two more years left of grad school.
How do you become a genuine leader? I'm like, she's like, I think I need to see a therapist to become a genuine leader. I go, no. This is something that. So I would say two things. I would say one. Healthcare is extremely gratifying because you have the purpose is so real.
Yeah.
You're helping people in their most vulnerable times. You're helping people take control of their health. Health is wealth, right? And you know, for anyone. So I'd say that's number one. Number two, it is a system. It is a very big system that's multifactorial and multidimensional, and it needs help.
Yeah.
Healthcare now is different than when I started 30 years ago. It's vastly improved, but there are many, many areas. So people that enjoy having an impact, this is the place to be.
Yeah.
And I'd say, so you put the two together, you help people and you're purpose driven and you help a whole thing that is core to a society, to a community. I think it can be both very gratifying and I think people that enjoy solutioning and problem solving and continuous process improvement and learning can really, really enjoy the profession. I would say the other thing is, no matter all of that, the one thing someone said to me is, you know, you're an administrator. I'm not a provider.
Yeah.
But always make sure you have the patient at the table.
Yeah.
And you've got the vision, the voice, or the purview of the patient.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and it's like, it's your consumer, right?
Right?
So you can look at it however you want. It's like, what's your product?
Right.
And then how do you think about your consumer? And so you can never lose sight of that, right? And the patient comes with, it's just a different lens. It's not about like, oh, what's my, you know, my outcomes and the measurements of my outcomes. It's like, can I play with my grandchild now? Or whatever it is.
Right.
So you just always have to make sure you shift it a little bit and think about the patient being at the table.
Yeah.
So I've enjoyed it. I wouldn't change careers for anything.
Yeah, that's great.
And I would encourage anyone to get into it. You need to know what you're walking into.
Yeah.
But if you like to have a meaningful, like, walk home at the end of the day or wherever you get home and feel good about your contributions, and then look at that at whatever level. It could be at a patient level. It could be at a clinic level. It could be at a community level.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what's better. You said it. That's like, I get paid to do that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Our daughter is finishing. She's got another year of grad school left, and then she's got a residency. She's empathetic, but I'm like, I don't know how empathetic she is, because, you know, she's an Italian female, and she's very stubborn in her ways, kind of like me. But she is going for speech language pathology. And I didn't think she really had an empathetic bone in her body, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But now she thought she wanted to work with kids. And then when she started doing her clinical, she's like, you know what? Kids come with two people, a parent and a child.
Yeah.
She really loved working with the older adults that have had stroke or traumatic brain injury. And to me, I'm like, wow, you're not falling too far from the tree here, because my wife's a nurse and the empathy piece is there. But she's kind of found it. And I think that's good, because we try to give her little bits and pieces of what it's like to be in the healthcare industry. So
yeah,
I think it'd be great for her. So
yeah, congratulations. Yeah, that's pretty good. Cool.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah. My other daughter wants to be in marketing and communications, and she was challenged, just undergrad, finding a job, because she didn't have a really big resume. And so she just started working at MGH. I'm like, just get in.
Yeah.
Get into an organization. Hospitals are a great place.
Yep.
It's team environment. Yep. It's purpose driven. Just get in. And she's, a couple weeks in, and she loves it. And it's nothing like what she thought she'd be doing.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting with the kids these days, because we talked about like the Gen Zers or Gen Xers, or I don't even know what gen it is right now.
Yeah.
But she was interviewing for her externship for next fall. And she's like, she's living in D.C., she's like, it's in Virginia. It's an hour and 15-minute commute. I don't know. She wanted to be like right next door. I go, listen, it's for 3 months, first of all. It's at InnovaCare Healthcare Systems, which is a fantastic healthcare facility.
Yeah.
You're going to be working inpatient speech, traumatic brain, and stroke patients.
Great experience.
That could be your next job. That could be your ability to be able to network with somebody that says, hey, I have somebody that needs a position or someone to work in this position at this hospital. Yeah. So I said, bite the bullet for 3 months. It isn't always going to be easy.
Yeah.
I said, you wouldn't believe the places we had to travel to when we had our intern or externship.
Gymnastics we had to do.
Yeah, crazy stuff, right?
Yeah.
So she finally sat down and said, you know what? Yeah, I'll take your advice.
Yeah.
You know, so it took a little coaxing, but I feel like they just want to walk next door. I said, that's not going
to
happen.
Yeah. We also, on the other side of it, have to appreciate the different generations and how they look at things.
Yeah.
And we've got a very young population at ATI. I think our average age is like 35.
Wow.
And so we need to try to impose some of our wisdom, but we also need to respect that they are a different generation than we are.
Yeah.
And so finding that's actually been really challenging for me. But my kids are like my pilots, but we've got to, our providers are so important to who and what we are. We've got to kind of lay out the guardrails and then kind of let them blossom.
Yeah.
So
great.
It's good stuff.
Well, Sharon, listen, I thank you again for taking time out of your busy day. I'm very appreciative of what you do every day for us. I am excited to see what's coming down the road, as well as other people within the organization, I hope.
Yeah.
And I hope people enjoy this conversation.
Yeah, so do I. I think we could do this for another couple hours. I'm not sure people want to listen for that long, but it's fun. It's fun to talk about ATI, where we've come from, where we're going, what makes us unique.
Yeah.
And more importantly, how we can be impactful in patients' lives, communities, and in the PT or rehab profession.
Yeah. Well, thank you again. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. This is your creator and host, Andrew Rizza. If you enjoyed the content from today's episode, give us a like, leave a comment, and share on social media. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram at Behind Sports Med Podcast, on X under AJR Sports Sci, or check out our websites at ajrsportscience.podbean.com and at ajrsportscience.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel at AJR Sports Science. Stay tuned for our next episode.